leave your radio until he's done speaking. It would be rude. Bob McCowan of Primetime Sports is on the air on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Wednesday, September 25th, 2013, and Primetime Sports back on the air on the Fan and on Sportsnet in high definition coast to coast. Yours truly, Bob McCown. Damian Cox joins me to my right if you're watching on television or listening on the radio. You'd be on the right under any circumstance. A little bit later on, Ari Dickey will join us. Michael Downey, the new head of the Lawn Tennis Association. Leaves Tennis Canada. He'll tell us why. Well, we know why. Kerry Fraser, former NHL referee, will be with us along with Neil Smith. But to my left in studio, long time no see, the former co-owner of the Toronto Argonauts, David Cinnamon, is with us, looking beautiful as ever, Cinnamon.
Thank you, and so are you too, and I'm happy to be back, invited back once in a while. Nice.
Oh. Have you not had him back?
Well, David and I see each other occasionally, but I think it's almost been about six months since we saw each other.
Yeah, I'd say about that. But I've never been invited to these new fancy studios. I
mean, well, we didn't get these till after you sold the Argonauts.
That's right. Well, I see that.
That was exactly the plan. We waited and waited and waited, and finally you dumped them.
And then you moved into the new digs. Yeah, exactly. God forbid I should be in such a great studio. But I congratulate you. This is very nice. You know, you guys back at home, you're not seeing this. This is first class.
It's on TV, so yes, they can see us. So here's what's happened, and I know you know all about this. The Argonauts have signed a new lease to stay at the Rogers Centre until 2017, but then they're getting the boot. That'll be the end of that. And the plan is to put natural grass in the dome for the Toronto Blue Jays. First of all, as a point of reference, this conversation about natural grass has been going on for some period of time, more seriously in the last few years with Beeston. But during your tenure, did it ever come up?
Not really. I mean, if you recall, when Howard and I bought the team, we still had the old version of AstroTurf.
The crappy one.
I mean, this was, regarded as a carpet. I mean, you could still see the piping underneath. There was gutters. It was really, really bad. So the progression to the turf that Howard and I invested in was a major step forward. So grass wasn't really talked about. Only near the end at BMO Field was grass talked about.
Right.
Not a lot at Rogers, and it really is in the last few years.
So the Argonauts, A, have to find a new place to play, and B, need to find a new owner, because Braley says he wants to get rid of both BC and the Argonauts by, I think, the end of 2015.
He says another 3 years, yeah. Which, of course, opens the door for you and your buddy Howard again.
Well, I think that Mr. Braley is probably, you know, selling and looking to get out for some of the same reasons that maybe Howard and I disagreed with the league and the approach and stadium issues, and not looking to get out, but inevitably it's quite a commitment to stay in and support it, especially when the rest of the league, which is doing very well, and the league on a whole is doing very well, other than, you know, Southern Ontario, especially Toronto, where it's a much more difficult marketplace, as you guys are well aware. And I think the rest of the country is not as aware. And until there is some kind of revenue share or equalization of some kind, it's going to be challenging in this marketplace, regardless of a stadium, but Rogers Center is even that much more challenging.
So you and Howard went well down the road in looking for a new place to play. I think it started, correct me if I'm wrong, the first site was Varsity, and then, or maybe York, another one's, a York.
York. York.
And then ultimately...
A little bit with BMO, right?
Well, that was sort of a backroom deal, wasn't it?
It was.
Because you had Canadian Soccer Association as your partners.
We did. And York, you know, we had two deals done. And the shame of it is neither got executed. And York was done and completed with soccer. Inevitably, that would have been the stadium that would have housed the whatever soccer team would have been part of MLSC. York was shovel in the ground. We moved from York to Varsity, really being courted mainly by Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, which at the time, especially Larry Tannenbaum, had a vision of turning their arena into a practice arena before RICO for the Marlies and for the Leafs, turning Varsity Stadium, which didn't exist at the time but once did, into a football stadium, bringing soccer there. That was a beautiful vision, the right vision. We had, if you recall, a press conference. We had all the funding was done. And we ran into a very unique situation where the head of University of Toronto left in the middle of the term to California. They put in an interim lead, who I won't mention at this time. And his first and initial decision and direction mandate was to eliminate this project of the stadium. Mm. Otherwise, the plans were drawn. What you see at BMO today are actually the plans and drawings that were created for Varsity. And that was well underway, from funding to architecture, engineering, and really just, you know, the carpet was pulled out from beneath us at the 11th hour.
Well, and it should be noted that you were not invited to go into BMO.
I would think
so. The partnership sort of came asunder, but were you aware that there were problems?
Well, I think it started where, you know, MLSC backed out of the Varsity project also at the 11th hour. And so left us alone with University of Toronto, which, you know, obviously you have a lot more strength with Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. So they had a deal, you know, being created at BMO, an exhibition that we really didn't learn about till very, very late in the game. And kind of got invited because we, you know, we were banging on the back window looking at the party from the outside looking in. So the invitation wasn't real, and as it turns out, wasn't solid enough that the stadium was even built with
to accommodate you.
Well, yeah, with any of CFL or Toronto Argonaut, you know, football dimensions in mind.
What I mean, you know, when we're talking about that period of time, there was a possibility of Varsity, which I agree with. I mean, was a great vision how it was going to get done, but that was a great vision. You guys were able to get attendance up to around 30,000 pretty consistently. Won a great cup. Things seem to be looking pretty good. Now you fast forward to 2013. You're in the situation where the owner wants to sell. There's not going to be a stadium soon. Attendance is way down again. How would you assess the current state of the Argonauts in this city?
Well, it saddens Howard and I to assess it this way, and it's our opinion. And we're not trying to pat ourselves on the back because we had a great passion for the team, but I think we were very upfront, a face of the team. We really put our efforts and resources behind it. We had amazing management like Keith Pelley that progressed and drove revenue and created some excitement here in a very competitive atmosphere. And I think when, you know, David Braley, with all his passion and will, you know, for the CFL, is not, you know, fully engaged in the Toronto Argonauts, being two owners, owner of two teams doesn't help, but not fully engaged in the Toronto Argonauts, I think inevitably that rubs off on your entire management team. It rubs off on the face of the franchise for the city, the excitement, the passion. And you can see, you know, even with a Grey Cup, you know, I'm saddened to see how small the attendance is and how little exposure they're getting in the media, where I think we were at least creating more of a storyline, a little bit more news. And that was our intent and our goal, to continue and move that, you know, that needle along the way. And we weren't done when we got out in 2010.
Did you think after the buzz of last year's Grey Cup and you know, selling out and then winning it, that there was going to be a fallout from that, a positive fallout? Or did you fear that exactly what has happened was going to happen despite the success of that Grey Cup?
You know, to be honest, I would have thought that Grey Cup, especially the 100th, would have created a bigger buzz going into the year. I was shocked to watch the media exposure and the events they were putting on early on, and just didn't see that buzz coming out of it. And I think, you know, in this marketplace, when you're the Argos, not the Leafs, you have to make things happen. They just don't happen. You know, the Leafs, you talk about the Leafs when they're not playing. You know, you have to talk about the Argos when they're not playing. And if that's not happening and it's not driven by ownership in this city, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I'm disappointed and I am surprised that the buzz is not there and the success is not there post-Grey Cup.
With David Sinnemann, the former co-owner of the Toronto Argonauts. So let's bring this to where we are today, David. Where do you take the Toronto Argonauts? You have to be out of that building. You can't go to BMO.
Can't go to Varsity.
That's gone.
Can't go to York, correct?
I don't know if you can't go to any of those three. I think they're challenging and they each have their respective challenges and costs. But I can't understand why we have to rule those out. You know, York has just put a small, quasi-stadium in. I think they're very entrepreneurial, open-minded. If the funding was there, there's room and land to expand. Varsity's much more challenging being in the annex and right. The residential area. BMO is just dollars and cents.
But it's a lot of dollars because you got to rip one end down.
And many cents.
Yeah, and many cents and many angry fans in soccer. And frankly, right. I don't see that happening. I wouldn't rule York out. If I was in David Braley's position right now, for me, knowing where the subway's, direction is going and where York's, approach and aggressiveness is, it's not a terrible place to be looking at right now since they've already started to build a stadium.
So it has been speculated that there are communities that have approached the Toronto Argonauts already, suggesting they would like to host. And I don't know which specifically.
But you're guessing the Bramptons, the Mississaugas, places like that?
Vaughan, Milton, Mississauga are three that I've heard. I don't know if that's valid or not. Can you go there and be the Toronto Argonauts in a 25,000-seat or 23,000-seat stadium, in your opinion?
I don't know if you can succeed there, but I think what we do know is you can't succeed here unless it's a varsity situation. I don't even know if a BMO would succeed, depending on what they do to the stadium.
If they could fix the stadium, why wouldn't BMO succeed?
I think BMO would have a shot at it because I don't think it's only about stadium. I used to think it was mainly about stadium being the issue. I don't think it's only about stadium. I think it's about the competition you've got from NFL exposure here. You've got Buffalo Bills. You've got Leafs. You've got all the things we know about. And, it's a challenging marketplace wherever they want to play. Because when the press wants to talk about the Argos, that shouldn't matter necessarily where they're playing. Fan base will make a difference, but why will it make a difference on the buzz and the discussion and whatnot? And winning helps that. So I'm not so sure they'd be successful any longer anywhere here, and I don't think they have a choice but to try and go to a more rural area and build a stadium, because you'd need it there, obviously, and try to bring in a fan base and a new exposure around a different area code of the city. That might be the only way to go.
How far out would you go? Like Vaughan, Milton, would they be in the discussion?
I think so. I mean, especially Vaughan. I think, Vaughan today versus when Howard and I were looking in those areas in 2003, 2004.
Well, no comparison.
Completely different.
Right.
So you're talking about small cities. You're talking about cities that are bigger than some of the CFL cities that exist, like Regina and Winnipeg and whatnot, or at least the same size. So I think it's worth a shot. I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it, and it wouldn't be about money. But
would you
I
bet
don't
bet
think
any
there's
money
a choice.
On it?
Well, my heart would, because I still love the CFL, and I'm a passionate CFL fan, and I would do it again, and I don't regret anything that Howard and I both don't regret. But it wouldn't be, to hit a home run as far as dollars and cents were concerned.
This isn't what I was going to ask you, but it just occurred to me. You said you're still a passionate CFL fan. Do you go? Do you still go to the games?
No, and not because I'm not a passionate fan. It's actually difficult to go because Howard and I never expected.
Because they won't let you go on the sidelines anymore?
And they won't let me go on the sidelines or play or do any of those fun things. So it's hard to go back in the stands after being on the field. But it was a bit of a bitter breakup. It was hurtful. We didn't expect to leave. We never expected to leave or to walk away or to not be a part of the CFL. So, it takes some time, to go back in the surroundings that you were, you know, you were accustomed to going on the field and whatnot. But I watch games on TV. I follow it, and you know, I find myself, you know, slowly getting back into it again.
You know, you said if David Braley wants to build a stadium here, but he's not going to build a stadium. He's already made it clear he's outgoing. So you've got the double whammy of somebody's got to walk in here and either have the money themselves or the political connections to get funding at such a level. I mean, how much is the stadium going to cost? Bob thinks you could do one for what? 150?
120.
I mean, yeah, even that's a big nut for a CFL team.
Listen, it's...
For a money-losing CFL team.
I completely agree. This it takes individuals that are willing to, you know, be very committed to the league financially to do these things. I'm not so sure that government money for a CFL stadium is where taxpayers want their money spent. You know, Bob, as you know, there was already some, you know, gray area around the Grey Cup and some of the funding around that. So
please,
I think,
please don't get them started on that again. So, please don't.
And me neither. But so, you know, it's not that straightforward. It's a very big uphill, you know, challenge to do all this, and I'm not so sure it's going
to
get done.
We have to go, but last question, quick answer to this: does the CFL survive if the Toronto Argonauts don't?
You know, in my humble opinion, I think there not to the extent, but I think there is a CFL, and I'll relate it to the NHL. If the rest of the United States hockey teams in the NHL folded for whatever reason, could there ever be an NHL just in Canada? And the answer is probably yes. People would still go. I think there are such committed cities outside of Toronto that there would be a league. Would it be to the level of without Toronto? But I think there would be a league, yes. I think fans will go in Saskatchewan and Winnipeg and BC and Calgary and Edmonton, even Hamilton and Ottawa, regardless.
So if Braley called you, which he's never going to do,
but he might have somebody
call. Would you answer the phone?
No, probably not.
I don't think so. Great to see you again.
Well, it's a great being here. Nice seeing you guys.
And let's not make it so long the next time.
I agree.
The former owner of the Toronto Argonauts, David Cinnamon. We'll come back with more Primetime. We'll continue. You're listening on The Fan or watching on Sportsnet.
Blue Jays versus Orioles, tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet. Bob McCowan, Damian Cox in our Toronto studios.
We're gonna have to go back and talk a little bit more about what some of the things that David Cinnamon told us about the Argonauts. That's really interesting stuff. So we'll get back to that.
We'll get back to that in just a couple of seconds. We could have had him stay if we'd thought ahead of time. But
we'll go chase him down.
No, I'm not going to chase him down.
He's got a bad groin. He's not very fast.
He's got stuff to do. So we've spent a fair bit of time, and I think a lot of people have, in assessing what happened on Sunday night between the Buffalo Sabres and the Toronto Maple Leafs at the Air Canada Centre. And you know what I'm talking about. It was the fight. And the, you know, a Leaf comes over the bench and gets a 10-game suspension, and their star player takes a couple of whacks at a goon who was trying to maul him and winds up getting suspended for the rest of the preseason, which is like a bonus, really, not a punishment. But in the midst of this, one of the subtexts is, in this kind of scenario is, what role do or should the, or could the officials have in this? And I'm not here to suggest they should have, so don't read this incorrectly. But I think it's worth pursuing. In an era where it's very difficult for the average fan to be able to assess what officials' responsibilities and roles actually are, how much is dictated by the league itself, in this kind of situation, a guy, 6'8" guy, comes out onto the ice, and I think everybody that was paying attention knew what he was there for. Should the officials, could the officials have stepped in, given a warning, It's kind of like an umpire in a baseball game. Somebody throws at an opposing batter, throws one high and inside. You know, there's a warning
given.
You
see it all the time. They go stand in between them. They say, guys, guys.
Don't do this. Who better to talk about this with than former NHL referee Carey Fraser, who joins us. Carey, how you been?
I am great, Bob, and good to talk to you and Damian as well.
So tell me, as you assess what happened on Sunday night, was there a role for the officials in trying to preempt what actually took place?
Well, there's times when you'd like to be proactive, but this situation really didn't provide the time or the space for the officials to go to John Scott. You know, you can't act as a coach because if you tell that guy and lay the law down before things happen, he's going to say, you do your job and I'll do mine. And inevitably, Leafs had home change, last change. There could have been, Randy certainly could have maybe adjusted his personnel on the ice with John Scott coming out. But it happened so quickly that, especially in a preseason game, you know, you don't anticipate that things are going to get rolling as quickly as they did. Now, Phil Kessel has to realize that if you're going to chop down a tree, you better do it with something besides a twig. I mean, that guy is huge. And he took a couple of great whacks at him, but it took some added help to bring down John Scott. And the other thing on the rules of that situation and the way it unfolded, when there's a match penalty called in the original altercation, you don't have a third man in situation. It's an exemption provided. So that first two-hander by Phil Kessel would have qualified in my determination and judgment as a match penalty, even though it was in self-defense.
I'm interested in the first part about what you said. You don't think there was referees, there was time. So there was a fight. A guy was hurt on the ice. Turns out Corey Traub has a broken jaw from that fight he had with Jamie Devon. And so there was a break in the action. There was a lot of jawing between the benches. Scott was over there. He was standing by the bench, and then he went out. I'm a little surprised, Carey, to hear you say you don't think they had time. I mean, there's been so much talk in recent years about the single referee system versus the double referee system and the feel for the game. I got to believe if Carey Fraser's on the ice, he knows there's trouble brewing.
Carey, you still there?
I'm here. I lost you there for a second, though. Was that you talking, or was that Damian?
No, that was Damian.
Well, he was mumbling then. Okay, I'll give him a pass on that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you heard the question. My question was basically, I'm a little surprised that you think it happened so quickly because I've got to believe
still not getting Damian in there, Bob. Can you translate for me?
Oh, really? I mean, you're not hearing him? Is there some reason why Damian's mic is not going through? We don't know why. He's asking why he thinks that there was time for the officials to assess the situation and realize that trouble was at hand. And I think in the first time he asked the question, he suggested that perhaps if Carey Fraser had been on the ice, you would have been able to assess, uh-oh, something's going to happen here. I better be proactive.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that did happen one night in Madison Square Garden. When it was late in the game, and it was before the rule was instituted where within the last 5 minutes, if an instigator was assessed on a fight, it was an automatic suspension. But I read the temperature of the personnel on the ice. It was a lopsided score, and the player that came out wasn't going to tie it or win it. So I went to him, and I said, listen, if you start something, I'm going to throw the book at you. He told me to go fly a kite. To which I responded, you've got 10, you're not going to start anything, and the linesman quickly grabbed him and got rid of him. So I was able in that case to be proactive, get the man off the ice, and know that there had been trouble avoided because he certainly didn't come out, as I say, to tie it or win it.
Could that have taken place as you understand the chronology of events on Sunday night?
I think so, but you had two experienced referees. I mean, Kelly Sutherland is terrific, and Kevin Pollock as well. And just, again, there's some rust on the whistles, as there is rust on the blades in the preseason. You sometimes don't anticipate that emotions are going to run that high and as quickly, you know, with a spark that is going to take off as it did. Ready for a face-off, and one quick touch from Scott, and the glove came off, and away we go. Looking back in hindsight, certainly I think each guy would say, you know what, 6'8" versus maybe 5'10 and a half, 5'11. I don't know what Phil is, but he's
about that. Yeah.
About that. And the skill level is different. So it might be a good opportunity to try and control it, even if you have to bait John Scott into saying something that might put him in the box for an unsportsmanlike or a misconduct, send him to cool off for a while.
We're with Kerry Fraser, former NHL referee. Damien has moved to another microphone. Do a test here and see if he can hear you.
Well, how about now, Kerry? Can you hear me now?
I got you. Perfect.
Now we go.
The golden throat.
I thought you were just messing with my head again, but we've done that before. Let me ask you this. The fine to Ron Rolston, the Buffalo coach, is interesting. And I know you would remember the whole incident back in 82 with Don Perry and Paul Mulvey and that whole thing. And that was the league basically saying, holding a coach accountable for what he was telling his players. Are you comfortable with the league saying to a coach, it's your job to make sure things don't get out of control? That's why they fined him, because they feel as though he didn't do that.
I absolutely believe that the best control comes from behind the bench. And when I've had coaches that are in very emotional and outbursts, Mark Crawford, as a rookie coach with Quebec Nordiques, was very emotional and sort of agitated his players from behind the bench. And I go to the other side of the coin, where Al Arbour was such a disciplined coach. When he spoke, you listened, because he very seldom said anything. And he had full control of his bench. He knew, they knew when it was time to pull the reins in and not take a penalty, and it all stemmed from the discipline behind the bench. So I think that the league is certainly within its right to enforce some control from behind the bench. He's the guy that opens the door, taps him on the shoulder, and even if it's an unspoken word, when you put somebody out there like that, he knows what his role is, and it's his time to do his thing.
Last point, unless Damien has some other direction to go with this, I thought I'd take the opportunity to ask you about something that fans tend to be puzzled by, and maybe some of us too from time to time, and that is, and we had that sort of scenario in this. Did Kessel get any, was Kessel given any kind of penalty?
He received the match penalty.
You got the match penalty, but was that for the slash?
That would be for the each of them.
For the two-handers, okay.
Yeah, the two-handers would
pick
certainly
one.
Constitute an attempt to injure.
But you know yourself, Kerry, that in the past, it happens with some regularity, that an incident happens on the ice, no penalty is given by the official. And I'm not talking about an incident where the official didn't see it,
right,
but where the official determined in his judgment that it was not an offense, and then subsequently the league looks at it and administers supplemental discipline for that. Does that, I mean, I don't know that that happened with you, but is that bothersome to officials?
Well, I had the other situation where I was trying to control the headshot and high hits, dangerous hits, 5 years prior to retirement, and I assessed two of them that were rescinded because they felt they were good hockey hits. They were disastrous. They were train wrecks. And if you looked at them now, you'd say, oh, my God, those are worthy of 3 to 5 game suspensions. So, yeah, that bothered me, because it bothered me more that the other officials that were watching it on, you know, SportsCenter and all the highlight reels went, wow, that was really bad. But then the next breath was, yeah, but did you hear it was rescinded by the league? So that means they don't want to call that sort of thing. Mm. And that contributed to some of the snowball rolling down the hill that resulted in an avalanche that we're now at. And it's turning again. It's thawing, you know, with illegal checks to the head. I think the big loss for the Leafs in this situation is David Clarkson. He is
sure
a terrific player, and I love the way he plays. He's a heart and soul guy, and he really did an awful lot of leadership with that New Jersey Devil team and turned into a good player beyond just his physicality. And 10 games in the regular season, boy, that's going to be a huge loss. And it's unfortunate that during a regular season game, you know, he didn't have the seatbelt on the bench, because that's, as they say, going to be a huge loss for them. And the new rules, you know, we're looking at visors for players under 25 games, fewer than 25. I think that's a good rule. We're also not taking a helmet off in a fight. It might work to the favor of saving some concussions.
Kerry, good of you to join us. Thanks as always, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you, and good luck at the start of the season.
Kerry Fraser, former NHL referee. Now you want to move back to your other microphone?
I don't know. I don't know what to do anymore.
You're like in stereo now.
There you go.
I've never seen, in all the years we've been here, I've never seen that happen.
That's weird. That's why I thought he was just messing with me.
He might have been. Anyway.
Refs will do that. You got to watch them. They were always unfair to me whenever I played sports. Did you know that?
Yeah, Damien. We all
no,
all knew that.
I think that's part of what he said is true. Is sometimes, you know, we all look back. This should have happened. This should have happened. Well, the referees are on the ice, but that's why the best guys are the best guys, and they got to smell trouble.
And the expectation is high of them, and they have to be able to, and they should be able to. They do it professionally. This is their living. They do it all the time. They know who these players are.
And now, Bob, versus 20 years ago, they're very well paid for what they do.
They know who the players are, and they know what their roles are, and they know what the expectations are when a certain guy comes out on the ice.
And I totally get what Kerry's saying. It happened, bang, bang. I just think when you look at the sequence of events, player hurt on the ice, that took time. There was a lot of chatting going on.
Time to think about it and talk about it.
I can't believe those referees didn't look and say, something might be brewing here.
Yep. 23 before the hour. We'll come back with more. Primetime will continue. You're listening on The Fan or watching on Sportsnet.
Blue Jays versus Orioles. Tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sixteen before the hour. So you wanted to turn the clock back a bit to our conversation with David Sinnemann and some of the things that he said, perhaps off the air, hopefully not in confidence.
No. We don't end up talking a lot about the CFL on this program for a whole bunch of reasons, and part of it are your inclination not to, and part of it I think that in Toronto, it's pretty tough to get a CFL Argo conversation going, and as I said to both you and David, I cannot remember in my lifetime the Argos having this low a media profile. We could open up the phones right now and we would have a hard time, you know, versus Blue Jays, Leafs, even the soccer crazies will go nuts and start calling in. So I think that that's interesting.
They're just not on the radar of the average sports fan in Toronto.
I think that's right. So that's a way. So why are we talking about the Argos today? Well, I think we're talking about the Argos today, and people say you only talk about when there's bad news. Well, or we talk about when there's significant news, and this is significant news with the owner saying, I'm out of here in 3 years. At the same time, we know they're out of their current stadium in 4 years. I think there's a very good chance the Toronto Argonauts are in big, big, big trouble of survival.
I think it's 50-50 that they even exist.
Yeah, and maybe, look, the NFL's not in Los Angeles. I think the CFL, particularly with the television contract and support they get.
Are you saying the Argos should move to L.A.?
You know, the CFL could look, particularly they're going to have a team in Ottawa. And what if they are able to get a team going in Atlantic Canada? Could they then live without the Argonauts? If you're going to have a market where people don't care about them and they have no profile, you know, I mean, they get decent TV numbers. Maybe it'll affect your TV, your contract a little bit. But I, you know, if anything, I think this story's been downplayed a little bit in that it's also a reflection again of their low media profile right now. To me, this is big news. The Argos are in major trouble here. They're in need of a sugar daddy. And I'm not so sure there's another Sherwood Schwartz or another whoever else out there to rescue these guys.
Well, no, and the reason is, and you got to remember, with due respect to David and Howard, Sherwood Schwartz and the other people that have bought this franchise, most of them have bought it for a nickel.
Right.
With the understanding that this thing loses money. Now, all of them, of course, nobody buys a business without believing they can do it better than the guy before them. And that's natural. And then what has invariably happened with all of them is they've said, holy crap.
We're losing a lot of money.
We're losing a lot of money here. Yeah. And maybe it's time to stop that.
How much do you think they're losing now a game?
Or this year?
They're
in the, between, David, I think David was right, and I concurred, 5 to 7 million.
Yeah.
Impossible to know how much. It could be more than that. Attendance is bleak. It's not bad. It's bleak.
Yeah.
Attendance is maybe not at an all-time low, but damn close.
It's about what it was when Sherwood Schwartz joined the team.
I have a hard time remembering exactly, but...
Oh, it was disastrous.
Well, it's pretty much disastrous. It's pretty close to a disaster.
And this is after the 100th Grey Cup was here, after the Argos won that game in front of a sold-out stadium.
No, I know, but
it's remarkable to me, Bob.
But Grey Cup games, even Grey Cup championships, have proven in the past to have virtually no influence on what happens the next season. It just doesn't. It's not about the performance on the field. And it's not a, you know, we all understand 4 million or 5 million or 7 million, I don't even know how many people watch the Grey Cup on television. It's a big event. I mean, I may pay little or no attention to the Canadian Football League all year long, but I'll be in front of the television set for the Grey Cup regardless of who's there.
My parents, they're from England. They would never watch a CFL game. They'll watch the Grey Cup.
It's a kind of a traditional fall thing. It's kind of like the Thanksgiving Day games in the United States. You know, it's just something you do. And I've had many Grey Cup parties, and the place is filled with people who A, haven't watched a CFL game all year, and B, aren't there to watch this one.
And would never go to a CFL game themselves.
Would never go. They're there to drink and eat and party and have a party.
And to people of a certain
age.
And
that's okay.
To people of a certain age, there's a bit of nostalgia to it, I think.
All of that.
None of us want the CFL, the Grey Cup, or any of their teams to go away.
None.
But.
Am I prepared to invest in it?
And not just that.
My time and energy?
Not just that. I mean, I'm not prepared to ignore the fact that there is remarkably little interest in these guys. And that hurts me because I like this league and I want this to be a successful team, but I'm just observing what I see. And now you're in a situation where, I mean, you tell me how this works out and the Argonauts are a successful franchise in 6-7 years.
What's the scenario? I don't have the answer.
Well, you must have a scenario. Give me your dream scenario.
Here's the deal. The federal government some years ago determined that they were going to put an end to all of these people looking for handouts for stadiums or stadia or arenas for professional franchises. So they decided that heretofore they would only consider subsidizing, this is the feds, consider subsidizing facilities that were on the property of and used by educational institutions.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Hence, Laval got a wackadoo to build a new football stadium.
And they're going to host the Vanier Cup this year.
Have you been to the new Winnipeg Stadium?
No, but it's beautiful.
Isn't it on the site of one of the universities?
It's on the University of Manitoba.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is no accident.
Mm.
It is because they were able to get federal funding in order to, if they built it there.
Now, the new stadium in Hamilton is not on McMaster University.
They will not property. Get. They do not get federal funding. I don't think.
Well, they're part of the Pan Am Games thing.
That's a whole other thing.
So you got to hook into something else, is what you're saying.
Well, that's why I'm saying that York, if in fact David is correct, and York is still interested in a stadium, being an educational institution, they would have the ability to tap into those funds.
But here's my problem. Let's say that happens.
I think that's the only way that happens.
There's a 25,000 seat stadium,
right,
on the grounds of York University.
Right.
Who's going to own the team? And does it change the equation at all that more people are going to go to the games? Because it's suddenly out of downtown Toronto and up at York University. I get that there's going to be subway. I get all that sort of stuff. But does a new stadium for the Argonauts really change the way people in the GTA feel about the football team?
I don't know the answer to that. But I think David said it either. I don't remember if it was on air or off. There's always a guy. When you think there's nobody,
but that's not
there's always
about,
a guy.
I'm talking about the population.
But there's always a guy that believes he can do it. And Clearly, he has to be local because you have to understand the market and you have to work it yourself.
I think he's
a Sherwood Schwartz would will never work.
Well, I think David Braley, I think
is. Well, that was a joke.
It is a joke.
It's a joke. Yeah. So, essentially, the writing was on the wall that, you know, the day the CFL pulled that fast one.
Well, they had a choice. They had a choice of, look, let's cut a deal with Cinnamon and Sokolowski and give them some money from the league coffers, a couple of million a year. Because we need Toronto in the league,
right.
And it's a tough sell for all of us. So let's give him that. Or let's let David Braley buy it so he can own two teams and have two Grey Cups in a couple of years. And we'll just let...
And put a wackadoo in his pocket with the Grey Cups.
And
which we'll, everybody does.
And they went, let's do that. So now Braley wants out, and they've got exactly the same situation still sitting here in Toronto.
Will they have an easy time finding a buyer in BC? Probably easier than Toronto. That may not be easy
either.
Well,
the one thing that they will have in BC is they have a spectacular stadium.
Yeah, they do.
It's not a nice stadium. It's a spectacular stadium now for football. So they have that. The Argonauts will have no stadium.
I think the stadium situation could be resolvable.
But remember what Cinnamon...
Are you prepared to take the team outside the downtown core?
And are they still the Toronto Argonauts?
And are they still the Toronto Argonauts?
But you heard what David said. He said, I used to think it was all about stadium. I don't think that anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's about a whole bunch of things. And it might be about, eventually, it doesn't work. The break. And then Michael Downey, now the chief executive of the Lawn Tennis Association of Britain.
Hello.
R.A. Dickey, Neil Smith, also coming up when Primetime continues on The Fan and Sportsnet.